Welcome back to Jump Scare. I'm Betty.
And I'm Shad.
This week, this is our second serving double feature of Blade 2 and Fright Night 2.
There's a world beyond the one we know, where the powers of darkness fear nothing but one man.
We represent the ruling body of the Vampire Nation. They're offering you a truce. They want to meet with you.
You sure about this?
They'll take us in deeper than we've ever been.
Now, those he has sworn to kill need his help to fight a new breed of terror.
They're no longer top of the food chain.
Our forces are ready to fight, but we need a leader.
Let me get this right. You want me to hunt them for you?
Ooh, so exciting.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Keep your friends close. Keep your enemies closer.
So let's just start off with saying that Roger Ebert, okay, who is known to just have very strong criticism on film, and he's like the man, right? Oh, he was the man of that. He gave this film 3.5 stars, okay? Yeah. That is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
I wish I could ask him why. I mean, I read his review of the film. And he praises Del Toro. He already sees that he has, like, this is a guy to, like, watch out for. Like, this is, he's going to be something big. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Because obviously, who doesn't know Del Toro? At the time, it's like, oh, okay, Del Toro. But now it's like, hey.
He had done a few things at the time. He had already done Mimic, which didn't go over very well.
No.
And he had done a few, I'm not sure if The Orphanage or what show, is that the one he did, The Orphanage, or...
He wasn't Del Toro yet.
Yeah, people he knew was... kind of who he was. I had seen the one he did with Ron Perlman earlier, called Kronos.
Kronos, yeah. You saw Kronos?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. I haven't seen this film since probably 2003, when it came out?
2004.
So it's been 2002. It's been a long time. It's been quite a while. Shad, when was the last time you saw the film?
Maybe 10 years ago or so. It's been a while since I watched it.
Well, this is set 4 years after the original Blade.
Yeah.
And for actually, and how long was... what is his even name in the movie? Chris Christopherson. I can't even say his name.
Whistler.
Of course. Whistler. How could I forget that? Whistler was in that, he was captive for a while. Or is it like, it's like the night after? Like, what?
Yeah, supposedly. Well, of course, he died in the first movie.
Yeah.
But then they wanted to bring him back for this one. So they put a whole storyline in of the vampires actually didn't kill him. They revived him and made him into a vampire. Then would spend every night torturing him and then, you know, putting him in a vat of blood to bring him back at the end of the day. Just so they could, again, kill him off in the third movie.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean,
he was smart to not be involved in that third movie.
Yeah, he's in it. Norman Reedus is in this film as, a side character. And he was already kind of, like, a co-star in... Boondock Saints.
Yeah, he'd been in that, and he had been in Mimic that Del Toro did as well. He played like the coroner or something in that. He had a very small part in it, but you know, when you saw him, you were like, oh, shit, I didn't realize he was in this.
The thing that ruins the film for me is this film, because if you live during this time, this film is everything that was happening in film in the early 2000s. Films like this, everyone wanted to be The Matrix.
Yeah.
Like, the style, the fighting style, the way the camera works, like, everything about it is very Matrix-y.
Everyone's in black, trench coats.
Yeah, that's what, because the movie, because that was a trend, and there was, I mean, so many movies that came out that had to have that in it. That ruins the film for me. The film overall, I mean, it's fucking hell of a lot better than what I thought was this. I thought this was a Stephen Dorff one.
No, that's the first one.
Oh, shit. Wait, who's in part three?
Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds
and Jessica Biel are in the third one.
Wow, forgettable. I don't even remember that movie then. I only remember the first one, and I'm all over the place with the Blade movies now, but I revisited part two, so there you go.
Well, in terms of quality, like, the first Blade movie is not great, but it was great at the time because that came out in 1998, and superhero or comic book-based movies were all like, we know it's a comic book, so let's play up the humor. We've got to make it campy and silly because that's what all the comic fans want. No, they wanted, like, a serious
adaption. The Crow wasn't like that.
No, but that's one of the exceptions.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the most part, everybody, when they tried to do it, it was like, oh, we're going to do Spawn. Well, let's camp it up. Let's change all the characters. Let's do, you know, all this crazy stuff with it. And it never worked. So when they did Blade and they stayed fairly close to the comics and kept it mostly serious, even though some of the effects are pretty terrible in Blade, they were at least trying to keep it serious, you know? They were trying to be somewhat faithful to the comics, because in the years past when they had done Blade, they did a Blade on the animated Spider-Man series in the 90s, and they just immediately recast it as a white guy. They were just like, well, he's a white guy because, you know, we can't have this black guy on a kid's cartoon killing vampires. Nope, can't do that.
Oh man, the beginning of the movie is kind of like a recap.
Yeah, they give you a little recap on it because it's been 4 years.
Yeah, and it has like the Mission Impossible, like, there's narration. Just like, it just reminded me of Mission Impossible, the beginning. the opening of the film is that I already knew. It was like, oh no, I'm gonna have to sit through this. So it's gonna be rough on me.
With the like little recap?
With the recap, yeah. With the recap, it already gave it away for me. These aspects of the movie also shake my head.
Okay.
The martial arts. The vampire killing with machine guns.
They're silver bullets, though.
Okay, fine. The techno music. Because, you know, obviously you have to have techno music. And then they try to do things that they did in the first film. Because that opening scene, like the opening scene, but that scene in the first film with the rave and they're listening to the dum 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 dum. I mean, yeah. In the theater, I was like, this is fucking amazing. I was blown the fuck away. I was like, holy shit, this is going to be, I've never seen this shit.
When the blood starts spraying down on them,
yes.
And everybody's dancing. Yeah. I mean, yes. There were some really innovative things in the first one.
Yeah, I don't hate the first one. I know that I said I hated it because Stephen Dorff is in it. I just don't like him. I didn't like him at the time. I had problems with him. Not because of the gate. So it has nothing to do with the gate. I love that movie. But I don't know. There's just something about him I just didn't like. And then he sticks with me, but I always think that he's in the third movie. But that's because whatever Ryan Reynolds did and Jessica Biel did in that movie really fucked with my mind. So I'm living in another world. What? Now, if anyone has seen The Strain, which is Del Toro's other vampire take...
The vampires in that are very similar to the vampires in Blade 2.
Yes.
In terms of how they like have a tongue thing that comes out and like even the description, to go back a little bit, this one involves, instead of just hunting vampires in it, they're hunting a new kind of vampire that eats not just humans, but eats vampires as well, eats other vampires as well. So the Vampire Council has to, you know, put a group together and team up with Blade for them to go down and stop this new strain of vampire that'll threaten humans and vampires.
And it's a big threat because, I mean, these things could take you out in probably, like, I don't know, let's say 3 months, and then humanity and vampires are done. But then it's like, well, then what are they going to eat? There's so many questions that I have about...
Yeah, it's one of those things. It'd be like, eventually they'd kill out themselves, but... Yeah, so you have them teaming up on that, which, you know, was a little different than the first one, where he was just trying to kill all the vampires. And this one, besides, you know, Norman Reedus, is, you know, has his part in. He's placed the guy. It was kind of the replacement for Kris Kristofferson. He was like the tech guy in the original Blade that was helping out Blade by getting weapons and all that. So this one, it's Norman Reedus until they bring back Kris Kristofferson. Then they're both kind of being the tech people. But you also have Ron Perlman showing up as one of the vampires, which, of course, I think he's in most Del Toro things for a while. So he even read the Strain audiobook. So,
oh, interesting.
Yeah,
I did not know that.
Yeah. So, you know, they're friends. So Ron Perlman shows up in a lot of those. So, and seeing him and stuff in the 2000s was no shock at all, because he was in everything.
I mean, as you probably heard, you may have heard one of our previous podcasts where we covered a movie where he is in it, and it's pretty terrible, but fucking hilarious.
Yeah, one of the funniest movies we've covered. Five Girls.
Five Girls. Best movie ever.
So that's the plot of this one, and really the whole movie takes place over a day or two. You know, they go to the vampire rave, which, you know, there's one of those everywhere you go. This one's mostly in Europe, set in Europe, because the last one was all in America, so you had to go overseas in this one. And
I mean, of course you're going to have to go overseas. That's where the fucking, the console, like, fancy vampires are living. They're not going to live in fucking United States.
Not
like
Staten Island?
No, they're not going to live in, like, a mansion in Utah. Like, no.
Yeah. So, they go to the vampire rave to try to find these, you know, uber vamps, and then they track them from there, and it, you know, like I said, it takes place over a night, a day, and then a night again, really. So it doesn't play, you know,
it does take over, it goes really by really fast.
Yeah.
For me, the movie felt like it was 5 hours long, but that's probably because I may have fallen asleep during the film.
It really is kind of like, it's been a long time since I've seen it, and I remembered different things about it, you know, when you haven't watched a movie in like 10 years. You see, and you realize that this was really kind of like one just long extended fight scene. There was very little plot to it. The plot was essentially, like I said, kill the uber vampires. That's it.
Yeah, that's a good summation of it. It's very Shakespearean to me, because the whole film, like, well, the main plot, like, later on, that you find the twist of the movie is very Shakespearean. Because you have, I mean, spoiler alert, the son having to kill the father.
Yeah.
So that was very, like, you know, it's just like, when you think of royalty and, like, houses, there's always going to be fucking betrayal and, you know, all that kind of, like, heavy fucking shit going on. Because, of course, you had to get up on top. Like, he probably fucking killed his own father before him. Like, the main guy. Like, shit goes down when there's royalty involved. So, there's no hands are clean. Everyone's hands are dirty. And that was a dirty secret of these new vampires that you find out later on.
Is that, yeah, the regular vampires created them because they wanted to try and infuse them with abilities to make them more... They were no longer affected by sunlight, silver, that kind of stuff, so that, you know, they could be more powerful and take over the world without any problems.
Yeah, which is like, you already got, like, an up on humanity. You live forever. You survive just solely on blood, so you're saving tons of money on groceries. I mean, just let's be honest. And you're fucking strong as hell. Like, what more could you want? I feel like it was kind of greedy. They're like, we have to be prone to silver, and we have to be daywalkers. I mean, that's where it's at. That is where it's at. Even though they hated Blade because he was a daywalker.
Well, they hate him just because they can't be him.
Well, yeah, okay, I guess. Blade's pretty dope. I would have to say that you did mention something about Morbius and Blade.
Yeah, so originally the main character in this, which is like a white-skinned vampire that's like different than the other vampires and all that, was supposed to be the character Morbius from the like Spider-Man and Blade comics, who was a, you know, a scientist that made himself into kind of an uber vampire. But they pulled it out at the last minute because they said, you know, we want to keep that. Maybe do a separate movie about him.
And
of course, it's, yeah, 18 years later, they're finally getting around to doing that.
18 years later, they already did it, and we're just waiting around when that shit's going to come out with Jared Leto. Because I don't care. I don't care about what anyone feels with this whole betrayal of the Joker bullshit. I love me some Jared Leto. Like, I'm dying to see him as a fucking vampire. I've seen the trailer so many times.
Well, and, you know, you got Michael Keaton in there making a little thing like, hey, what's up? They're setting it up so that all the Spider-Man villains can get together.
I'm all about this. I'm ready to watch this film in all aspects. But that would have been pretty... I don't know how I feel about that because, you know, Del Toro's so good with his monsters. Like, he's about the monsters. And he created, you know, this whole vision with these monsters, which he obviously must have really loved because he uses it later for the TV show, novel/TV show, that this is, like, that kind of vampire is just so creepy. He's just disgusting and, like... the mouth opening and oh yeah,
that's the strength in this one, I think, is the effects
for sure, because it's a mix
of the, a lot of it is practical because you can just tell when they're doing like the autopsy of the one vampire, they're actually touching things, you know. You don't see, when you're touching CGI, there's a different texture to it, but they're actually touching like a real body laying there.
Yeah, I really enjoy that part of it as well, because I'm not a hater of CGI because there's just some things that just cost too much money to have done and or it just looks better. Like, but you have to have a good mix of both.
Well, I feel like this one's a good one for it too, because you have a lot of scenes where, like, you know, blades jumping from things, you know, from one ladder to another or something. Yeah. And they're obviously using wires for it. So, you know, use the CGI to remove the wires. And they did a good job in this. Yeah, there's some crazy kung fu fights, Matrix style and that kind of stuff, but they're not as in-depth with it as they got later. You know, later on, all the superhero fights get super crazy and out of control and go on forever. The ones in here didn't go on for that long. You know, they were relatively scaled back by standards today. There's no, like, you know, 40-minute John Wick knife fight like there is in some of the stuff now.
Wow. You had to throw that out there, huh?
Yeah.
I really like that 40 minutes. No, that was way too long. Just shorten that shit in the next John Wick movie, guys. Come on. It's amazing, but let's keep it like 20-minute fight. Let's not have the fight be 40 minutes. It's just too long. I had to throw that out into the world so it could come back and I can have a shorter fight scene for these future films. Oh, Blade 2. Yeah, I give this movie 2 knives.
I'd give it 3 because I think for the time, for 2002, it did a great job with the effects. And it's really, it's not so much of a movie as it is kind of like an effects and Del Toro showcase. Saying like, this is what I can do if you give me some money.
Yeah.
And for that, it's enjoyable. But again, this is another one that'd be, you know, it's great in the theater. When you're seeing this in the theater on the big screen, you know, surround sound going on, it's really exciting. It's good at home, but I feel like this is a really good one to show like in a theater and see, or see with a group of people, because, you know, it's a crowd movie. It's a crowd pleaser.
Yeah, it's a little too long. I feel like they should have shortened it just a tad bit, because yeah, there's some scenes that just didn't need to be there or ran too long, like hanging on the jokes or, you know, and like kind of like that kind of stuff I didn't really care too much for. And it's
my
also
my favorite part. When Kris Kristofferson just whips Blady's sunglasses like across the room from like 100 feet across the room and at an angle, and he just catches them and in one motion puts them on. There you go. That's cool. Wow.
That's why I got that extra knife.
Yep.
Right there.
Just for the sunglasses scene.
Jesus. Okay. Well, that concludes our discussion on Blade 2.
Now, Blade 2 is generally considered to be the best of the series, but Fright Night 2 doesn't quite get the same love.
Tired of good girls.
Good night, Charlie.
Ready for some real excitement?
Go bowling.
Bowling?
Looking for someone incredibly seductive.
Do you know how to use your lips, Charlie?
Then this is your lucky night.
Welcome to Fright Night.
Fright Night 2. One taste is never enough.
Come kiss me.
Enter a world where each embrace takes your breath away.
Maybe it's the phone, Charlie.
And every kiss is a killer.
You can say that again, partner.
Roddy McDowell.
I kill vampires. That hurts.
William Ragsdale.
Do you mind if I borrow these?
If you thought one was fun, wait till you do two. Fright Night 2. Apparently, the suckers are back.
Fright Night 2, 1988. And this is 3 years after the original, which kind of fits the whole comparison with Blade, which was 4 years after the original. So some time has passed. And both films. And both films have a recap. Fright Night 2 has a recap. And it's a very... It's a cohesive recap of kind of like the main points of the first film.
But they are very careful to leave out any scenes with Evil Ed and Amanda Bierce's character. I forget what her name is.
Amy.
They leave out all the scenes with them. They just show Peter Vincent and... what's his name?
William Ragsdale.
Yeah, Charlie.
You know, the fact that they had to do the opening of this film is just, I love hate this film. It's a copy that I bought at a convention and
it's very hard to track down.
It is. It's not available for streaming. And Blade 2 also is not streaming per se. You can buy it. But I think it's also on Fuse channel at some points right now. You can catch it on Fuse whenever the fuck they're playing it. So you can't really watch either one of these films unless you own them. We own both of them, which is why we chose them. Because they fit. Because they fit our second serving double feature. And we own them. So there you go. Directed by Tommy Lee Wallace.
Yes.
Who also co-wrote this film. And if you don't know who the hell this is, then you're listening to the wrong podcast because he has his hand and he's Tommy Lee Wallace. Like, come on, he's Tommy Lee Wallace. He directed Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, episodes of Twilight Zone, Max Headroom, and 2 episodes of It. And amongst some other stuff done.
He directed the whole miniseries of It.
The whole... I think he only did 2 episodes. Yeah, it's just because it's 2 episodes. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I thought it was a 4-parter. Because the miniseries. It was a 2-part miniseries?
Yeah. Well, it may have been a 4-part miniseries. I think it might have been when it aired. But he did the whole thing.
Fine. Tommy Lee Wallace. He did the whole thing. Not going to take away credit. He fucking did it all. So, he's in it. Grise from the Monster Squad is also in this.
Playing a werewolf again.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. Which this one does delve into the whole, there's other monsters in this world as well, which is just a werewolf. But we don't really get that per se in the first movie. Even though some people would say, well, maybe the fucking caretaker of Chris Sarandon's character... Maybe he is a werewolf.
Yeah, I always was wondering what his character was. Was he like partially transformed to a vampire? Because he went out in the daylight and he took like a lot of damage. He was stronger than human and he took a lot of damage to kill.
Maybe he was a werewolf.
Or maybe he was like a ghoul or something like that. Like
I always thought he was a ghoul.
Like somewhat turned, like he had giving him, let him drink some of his blood just to give him power or something.
But you see, this is a crazy thing. If someone really broke it down, is the fact that he was traveling with his companion, protecting him because he is a daywalker. He can walk in the day because he's a werewolf. And he's only going to have like the problem like once, you know, in the freaking month. And in the second part, Regina, who's Chris Sarandon's sister in this film, related to him, he also is a werewolf. Like, her companions also were werewolf, who's obviously part of her posse, yeah, protecting her. So I don't know if they were, like, giving hints on, hey, 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 or just fucking coincidence.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting one where you, it's a vampire and a werewolf teamed up together where, you know, the werewolf is protecting the vampire during the day, the vampire protects the werewolf at night. That'd be an interesting take on
it. Can it be a buddy cop story? Ooh, where...
that would be good.
Yeah, where they only... they're detectives, so they only do, like... they do, you know, one obviously does the night work, and then the other one does the day work.
Well, they did that TV show called Forever Night.
Oh, God.
That was about a vampire detective in Seattle. And he worked the night shift, of course.
Of course. I mean,
but he was always in at night, and he was always out before the sun came up. And all you gotta do is throw a werewolf into that, and you've got a TV show.
Wow.
Approved. 7 episodes, Netflix, coming next season.
I would freaking watch that.
There's been a lot of vampire cop and vampire detective shows, but very little with werewolves. So I feel if we just go all out and get them all in it, and then occasionally their buddy the mummy comes by to talk to them.
Jesus, no. So Regina...
ooh, but the mummy is like dressed in a regular suit, just wrapped in bandages. Looks like he's just been in an accident. Okay, sorry, go ahead. I'm writing this show right now.
Oh, goodness. Okay. There's... the whole film is really... and this is where it gets me about the movie. I've seen this movie so many times. Okay? Never occurred to me that this movie literally is Friday Night. It's literally more or less the first movie. There's so many scenes in this, in the second film, that are reminiscent to scenes from the first movie. And I'm like, did they just say, fuck it, we're just gonna pull an Evil Dead 2 and, like, do this kind of thing? I mean, it's not, like, shot for shot, per se.
No, but if you've seen
the first movie...
it's not as egregious as the new Fright Night, the remake of Fright Night that came out in 2011. And then they did a Fright Night 2 in 2013 that went straight to video that is a literal remake of the first remake. They just pretend like the first one never happened, and this is just another remake of Fright Night.
I'm going to throw out with the scenes that I noticed. There's way more scenes. I lost a track of them because I was like, I'm not going to write down every fucking single thing. There is a Amy Jerry Dandridge dance scene in the first movie.
Yep.
Second movie recreates that with his sister Regina Dandridge and Charlie. So Charlie's the Amy in this scenario. And it's the same music.
Peter Vincent watching in the background instead of Charlie watching in the background.
Yes. Lord. The same mirror trick, okay, that is used in the first movie where you have...
well, not to be fair, in the first movie, he accidentally discovered it. He just happened to see it by an accident when he opened his cigarette case. This time, he did it deliberately. He deliberately opened the case and looked behind him to see if there were vampires, to check to see if they were vampires.
Yes, the first movie, first of all, the first movie, Peter Vincent, he goes to Jerry's house just because he's getting paid, right? By Amy and Evil, yep. Well, mostly by Amy. And the whole compact thing, his cigarette case, it happens, but it's a mistake. He wholeheartedly doesn't believe that these people are vampires. He thinks Charlie's nuts.
Yeah.
And when he sees it, it's a thing. So he has his back turned. He's like, whatever, he picks it up and then he doesn't see the reflection. The same thing happens in this one where he doesn't believe that they've already proven. Regina went out of her way to prove that this was all a performance art piece. That this, you know, there's like this whole dance and she comes out and she pretends to take out her contacts and her teeth. And everything is cool. And then Charlie leaves because he fucking forgot about his girlfriend. And then you have Peter go and just for the fuck of it, because he's like, I don't know, this girl getting like very, you know, marked up on her neck there in the corner, that looks kind of sus. Then he does the same thing where he doesn't drop it this time, but he has his compact out, which is a compact, not a cigarette case this time around. And he sees that there's no reflection. So that they could have shown another way of proving that it was that she was a vampire, as opposed to using the same character, doing the reveal, the same compact / mirror, something with a mirror in it. Ugh. Come on, guys, get more creative. That just bugged me. The end scene, I guess we're not going to get into the end, but there's an end scene that's just like the end of the other movie. There was just some of the ones that I just
it's very similar.
Had to point out. It's very similar in that. Does it take away from the movie itself? For me personally, it doesn't. And you know why? This is going to be really sad. And this is why I think this shit happens to a lot of sequels. I really love Charlie and Peter Vincent. And I like their adventure. I like the shit they're going through. I love vampires. So to see the same actors play their characters, which in a lot of, it depends on the sequel, but sometimes you can't get the same people back because of conflicting of schedules, or they don't want to be in it, money, whatever. They get recast and then you have to deal with this new person. I like seeing them again. And it was unfortunate that it took that long for them to come back. The first movie, not hella successful, but successful enough for there to be a sequel. Because this wasn't straight to video, was it?
Yeah.
It was straight to video.
Yeah. Well, it was originally supposed to be theatrical, but the movie was produced by...
Yes.
The father of the Menendez brothers, who, of course, there's even a story online where they had a Roddy McDowell and Tommy Lee Wallace had a meeting with Lyle Menendez Sr. like the day he got killed. And I think that's why this got dumped straight to video, was because of all the, like, they were involved with it and it was a whole mess. It was a bunch of stuff that was out of their control that it got dumped straight to video instead of going to theaters. If it had gone to theaters, it would have probably done well.
Yeah, maybe. I guess. There's a possibility that it could have done well.
It could have at least, I mean, it only had, like, the budget, which is a low budget at the time, was like $7 million. So they could have probably easily made that back with ticket sales at the time.
You have the vampire in this one. They, you know, turned it up a notch. It's now a woman.
Yeah.
And her posse, she doesn't have just one person with her. She has, like, a whole posse. And she's a performance artist, so she's already known to, you know, everyone.
She doesn't have to hide as well as Jerry did, because he was kind of hiding when he went into town. She, like, proclaims, hey, I'm a vampire, wink, wink, and everyone just takes it as a joke.
Yeah, exactly. This is a, you know, we're going to assume this is a world where there are horror hosts like Elvira, like Peter Vincent, so that wasn't, you know.
To me, that was them kind of ripping off The Interview with the Vampire of the Theater of the Vampire in Paris, where it was like, they're vampires pretending to be humans, pretending to be vampires. So, same kind of thing.
I do like a line that she says. She says, he tries to go and get her with the cross. And Peter Vincent, he approaches her with the whole cross. You know, you have that scene where he's coming towards her with the cross and trying to... And you think in the first movie, Chris Sarandon's like, you have to have faith. And this one, you know, you're like, oh my God, it's not working. Did he lose his faith? Like, what's going on? But she says that you're going to have to get... We've kind of got used to some of the trappings. And I did like that line because... You know, you're not, as the audience, you're like, oh, he has a cross, you know, or the garlic, and it's going to get him, and, you know, but it didn't in this aspect, even though they did a clever thing, which we talked about, which is the roses.
Yeah, that some of the vampire lore goes back to say that besides garlic, vampires are also put off by wolfsbane, wormwood, hemlock, and wild roses. And I think this is the only movie I've ever seen where they use roses to deflect the vampire.
Ever.
Which, again, makes me wonder, like, she uses the roses on the one character, on Jonathan Grimes, who we said is a werewolf. But is he a werewolf, or is he a vampire that's just taken wolf form?
I don't know. Maybe he's, like, a really hairy vampire, because he does get affected, but is it all just all creatures of the night? Or just him. Well, they implied it wasn't a full moon, so... Yeah.
He may have just been not been an actual werewolf. He may have just been a vampire turned into wolf form a lot.
Maybe that was, yeah, maybe that was his form. Because just like Jerry, you know, in like stereotypical vampire fashion, she's going to turn into a fucking bat.
Yeah.
So maybe his thing was that he turned into
a wolf. Yeah, and a lot of the lore, they turn into wolves, so...
Yeah, which is very true. They do turn into wolves in Dracula.
Yeah.
They're wolves.
That was just kind of like his between form there, you know, like half human, half wolf, or, you know, form.
Okay, I still want to see the buddy cop wolf vampire movie, though. She has an allure to her, and, you know, she's very sexual. I like the way, though, that she decides that she's going to get revenge for the death of her, for the murder of her brother. And that's to make, you know, her murder something that he hates, something that he's going around town and, you know, trying to take care of and eradicate these vampires is the best thing she can do.
She's going to turn him to a vampire and then keep him around for however long she feels like torturing him.
Torturing him forever, which, of course, the first thing comes to mind is if you're going to make someone to a vampire and torture them, you're going to have that vampire go and kill everyone he loves, because that is something you can't take back, and that's going to torture you forever to know that you murdered, you know, the people that you love. So that's the first route, right? And then, you know, whatever other kinds of torture she has. You know, you have Roddy McDowall doing his Peter Vincent going around with the cape and the fabulous clothes and the...
I love when they go back to his apartment to have a drink and he immediately just puts on the fancy silk smoking jacket like you do.
That's... you know, he's a man of elegance and, you know, he's going to go back and have his brandy and have his Venus fucking smoky jacket.
Yeah, and I love how he...
His smoking jacket.
And I love how he like takes all these props off the wall to use. Like, oh, this one really works. We'll take this off and we'll use this. Oh, this was from this vampire movie. And this was from this one. They bring all his props when they have to fight the vampires.
My first thought was, how did he fucking get away with all these props? Like, how is this not in the prop house in the freaking whatever fuck WNFE station that he worked with?
Well, you know, back in a lot of those days, they threw that shit away. Or just gave it away when they were done with it because they weren't going to reuse it.
Those are some dope ass props, I have to say. They were like movie grade, not like TV.
Yeah, well, they were from all his movies, not from
his movie. I'm sorry, not from his parts in the TV. My bad.
Yeah, so that's where they got all those because, you know, they used to just, a lot of times they just threw that shit away when they were done with it.
Do you think the wardrobe was also from the movies?
Probably, yeah.
Especially the fucking coat, right?
It's like his coat and everything. I'm pretty sure it was from the movies. He probably just kept that because they show him kind of like in a small, cheap apartment. And, you know, so maybe he kept his wardrobe because you rarely see him out of anything other than the Fright Night garb.
I would have died if they would have come over to like see him and he's like just chilling with like a fucking white t-shirt and jeans.
Yeah, he was always dressed very nicely. So he probably did take the wardrobe from the movies.
He must have because that you're just so fabulous looking. And I doubt that he was getting paid buku money from this...
Like, from Fright Night.
No. Fright Night. No, he was not making any money. Oh, man. You never really get any backstory on Regina. She's like, I'm here.
Yep, I'm here. I'm here to kill you.
I'm here to kill you. Where the fuck was she? Why was she estranged from her brother? How are they related? And not because she's a Spanish lady. Like, not because she's Hispanic and he's not... Jerry Dandridge wasn't Hispanic. We all know, like... vampirism, there is no like blood to blood relation. It's all your maker, not maker made you, and now you're fucking related. So there's just so much that's missing. It's just like, I'm here, this is what I'm doing now, kind of thing. I wanted a little bit more because you can't just say, hey, I'm related to this person, and then that's it. Like, what?
Feel like this one would be one that would benefit from... I know they tried to reboot it in 2011, do the whole Colin Farrell thing. It just didn't work. But I think if they could do this as like a Netflix kind of series, and you do the first season is Charlie and Peter Vincent stopping the vampire, and then the next season, you could even do the same thing. Like the vampire follows up, you know, the sister comes back, and then kind of have their continuing adventures. Have it be kind of a Night Stalker type thing for people give Peter Vincent tips about monsters, and they're like, okay, well, we'll go look into it. They kind of become like a sideline for them, you know? I would love to see something like that.
I would also like to see something like that. When you had mentioned it, I was like, okay, I would watch that.
Yeah, I'm sold on it.
But it has to be William Ragsdale. I'm sorry. I mean, I know that obviously he's an older gentleman, but I love him, and I would like to see him in this.
Maybe he should play Peter Vincent in it now.
Boom! Maybe he... But he's not... No offense, but no one could be Roddy McDowell. Like, he's...
Yeah, that's the thing, is who would you get now that would have the same kind of, like, presence and, like, back to story to him to play Peter Vincent?
I don't even know. That's why... And let me... I'm a huge Doctor Who fan, okay? Especially David Tennant. That's my doctor. Everyone has their doctor. David Tennant's my doctor. When I saw him in that role in that film, first of all, I didn't even want to watch the movie. When I heard they were doing a remake, I was like, garbage. This is going to be fucking terrible. How dare they? It's terrible. And it fucking was, okay? It was just a terrible movie. I can't even... I can't... The whole time you've been talking about it, in my mind, I've been saying... What movie? I don't know what that is.
Although I did love the part in that where they go to see him, David Tennant, for the first time, and he's got his, like, all of his earrings and piercings and tattoos, and then they go backstage and he just unclips all the earrings. They're all fake. He's wiping off the tattoos. They're all fake. It's just a whole stage persona. I did like that part of it.
Yeah.
Where it was just total bullshit, where he was just making it all up just to make money, and he didn't believe in any of it.
It made sense. I mean, you're not going to have a horror host for modern day. It made, because that wasn't a thing for this time. And it made sense that they would do more of a Chris Angel aspect, you know, kind of that kind of like magician, Las Vegas kind of guy. I get that. But I wish they just would have just recreated the whole Peter Vincent character and not have him be tied to like his profession is what made him. You know, maybe he was a horror writer for vampires or something. Something else that wasn't that. And I... I give this film... Can we change the knives to steaks?
Okay, yeah. We'll do a temporary change.
Temporary temp change. I give it 2.5 steaks.
I'll go along with that. It's a 2.5 staker.
It is. Yeah, it is. I mean, if you're just going to watch something, just watch the original. Don't even bother watching any.
Watch the original and then watch the You're So Cool, Brewster, that they did the making of the documentary for that. Like, it's like a 2-hour documentary about making it, and it's really interesting.
Yeah, it's always interesting when you watch the making of things. And I love these docu-series, like when they show us all that stuff that we didn't know that you can't just pull up on IMDb or whatever. Oh, yeah,
especially some of the shit in that Friday Night was crazy, where they were like, you know, they almost burned people alive. And, you know, they made, like, some of the stuff was like acidic. It was eaten through, you know, clothing and everything. It was so rough.
Hey, made the movie good.
It did.
So, you know, it is what it is. You can't recreate the amazingness that is some of these movies.
Yeah, the original is always going to stand on its own.
Yeah, it's very hard, and it's just one of those things, like, I don't... And or, if you're going to have someone do a sequel, then try to at least stay coherent to the original story or the original look, the way it was captured, you know. Because if you just do something different, it's like, this is already proven that this made money, which is why there's a sequel. You're not going to give a sequel, for the most part, to a movie that didn't make any money. So just let the people do what they do, and then don't get in the way. Thank you so much for joining us for this special second serving double feature of Blade 2 and Fright Night 2. Stay tuned to the horror.
And now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.